This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Vatican is expected to issue a document in the next few weeks that would bar gay men from entering the seminary and becoming priests. The ban would not pertain to homosexuals who were already ordained. In the wake of the church sex abuse scandal, the Vatican's Congregation for Catholic Education has begun a visitation to each of the 299 seminaries in the U.S. to assess the institutions. This visitation will take up the issue of homosexuality. A little later, we'll talk with a priest who supports a ban on gay men becoming priests. My first guest is a priest who is gay. He's in active ministry and works in a parish. His superiors have given him permission to speak with us, but have asked him not to give his name. I asked what the Vatican document banning gay priests is likely to say.
Well, I think that's really important that it's not been released, and it's hard to say exactly what it's going to say. But from all authoritative sources that the Times has contacted, that John Allen in National Catholic Reporter speaks about, it seems that the document that's going to be released in probably, we think, a couple of weeks is going to bar the entrance of homosexual men into seminaries and religious orders. That seems pretty clear. Now, whether or not it's going to be nuanced is sort of up for grabs.
When you say nuanced, what do you mean?
Well, nuanced could mean something like, they could say someone who has been sexually active, within the last couple of years can't enter, but someone who's been celibate can. They might say someone who supports the quote-unquote gay agenda can't enter, but someone who's a little more passive about that can. So there are various ways that the document could be nuanced. I would be surprised if it were nuanced, given the kind of language that's been used, that's been coming out of the Vatican in the past. So I don't expect a lot of nuance in the document.
What impact do you expect this document will have on priests who are gay like you? Priests who are already priests. Because the letter will specifically address people who want to become priests.
Right. I think that it's going to be very demoralizing if it does come out. Already, I've spoken to priests who are gay and celibate. I want to underline that. The vast majority of gay priests are celibate, who feel it's a real slap in the face and who feel just embarrassed and further shamed by a document that basically would say, you know, we don't want any more people like you. And also coming so quickly on the heels of the sexual abuse crisis and the document having been linked itself as a response to the sexual abuse crisis, it makes gay priests feel that they're being blamed for that. And so, you know, it's almost impossible not to feel demoralized and a little angry, too, at the prospect of this coming out.
Well, how directly linked is this letter to the sexual abuse crisis scandal?
Well, I think it's very directly linked. I mean, this document, from all sources, is going to be sort of coming out as part of the what's called the Apostolic Visitation, which is the Vatican's sort of investigation or review of seminary programs, which is a direct response to the sexual abuse crisis. So, you know, in a sense that the Vatican has initiated this visitation, and at the same time, people have been asking, well, we need some guidance as we investigate these seminaries about who we're going to admit. And so that's where this document is coming from. So, you know, and you've also had comments from bishops that have linked homosexuality with pedophilia. So all that taken together really, you know, underlines the fact that this document, which is supposed to be barring gay priests, is a direct response to the sexual abuse crisis.
Why do you think that barring gays from becoming priests is the wrong response to the sexual abuse crisis?
Well, for about a million reasons. The first one is that it conflates homosexuality with pedophilia, which, I mean, every expert rejects. Second of all, there are celibate gay priests ministering in the Catholic Church, and there have been for hundreds and hundreds of years, maybe even more than that. And they're doing a great job. And, you know, this is the last thing we need in an era of declining vocations, to sort of shut off the tap, for a group of really good and holy men. And then, you know, for another reason, I think it just it sort of makes it more difficult to be a gay lay Catholic, in the church. If you're told basically that, people like you can't be priests, we don't want people like you, it's sort of a further marginalization of the gay and lesbian person, in the church.
What message do you think it says to the larger society?
Well, I think to the larger society, the only message that it can send is that the church believes that gay men are incapable of living celibately, which is ironic because, you know, the Catechism of the Catholic Church says that gays are called to chastity. And it would be very ironic if the church says, well, you know, we don't believe that's possible. Even in an environment as supportive as a seminary environment, we don't believe that's possible. And I think, you know, once again, to sort of equate homosexuality with sexual abuse is really, it's just such a hurtful message to sort of send to people. And it's really the wrong message to send.
You know, I think a lot of people are wondering, what is the big fuss about this letter? Because the church doesn't really condone homosexuality. The church doesn't really condone gays becoming priests in the first place. At least that's the assumption. So what's the change here? What's different in this letter?
Well, there's a huge change. I mean, there's a law on the books in canon law from, I think, 1961 that says that anyone afflicted, this is a quote, afflicted with the evils of pederasty and homosexuality should not be admitted to a seminary. But, you know, there's also a law on the books that says that all seminary education has to be done in Latin. And, you know, both of those laws in the past couple of decades have basically been, you know, set aside and applied differently as people come to understand homosexuality, you know, in a more sort of mature and educated way. So the point being that there are gay priests and there are celibate gay priests that have been accepted, who have been open about their sexuality, not sexually active, but just open about, you know, who they were, and have been ordained and have, you know, served the church and have been celibate. And so it's a huge difference because basically, you know, right now in most religious orders and in many diocesan seminaries, you have celibate gay men being accepted and doing a great job for the church. So anything that's going to change that, I think, would be a huge, I think it would be a disaster for the church because you're going to be telling gay men who feel that they have a call to the priesthood, will basically ignore that. You're going to be telling seminarians who are already in the seminary, basically, you know, I'm sorry, you have to leave, even though they've been thinking about their vocation for years and years. And you have these celibate gay priests who have, you know, been working sometimes for 30, 40 years and living a healthy and chaste life, being told, you know, basically no more of your kind. So I think it's really demoralizing. And really the people are going to feel it the most are going to be, as we say in the church, the people in the pews, when they realize that in another 20 or 30 years there's going to be even fewer priests to minister to them.
Do you think it's fair to say that the church's policy for gay priests in the recent past has been basically don't ask, don't tell?
Well, you know, it depends where you are. I think in some seminaries that might be the case. But, you know, in a lot of religious orders, for example, it has been ask and tell. I mean, it's just a way of, you know, encouraging people to be honest. I mean, I myself came out after I entered the seminary. And, you know, it was a great experience of real sort of liberation in the sense that, you know, I finally understood that, you know, God loved me as I was, you know. And to be able to sort of accept that and celebrate that, that message of God's, you know, unconditional acceptance for all of us, no matter who we are, was a wonderful way to start off my seminary training. And it's also a wonderful message to bring to people in the world. So I think, you know, there has been so much more openness in the past couple of decades, and I think that's been a help. It hasn't been a hindrance. And, you know, ironically, this notion that it's going to be, you know, addressing the sexual abuse crisis, you know, most of the perpetrators of these sexual abuse crimes came from seminaries in the 1940s and 1950s where sexuality was not being talked about. And so I think the openness is actually an antidote to some of these problems.
You said you came out, was it after you entered the seminary?
Mm-hmm.
What does it mean to come out when you're in the seminary?
Well, I think the same thing that it means to come out in the real world, except you're not, you know, you're not having sex, obviously. You know, I entered, I think, you know, always knowing that I was gay, but being very embarrassed about it and, you know, not wanting to tell anybody about, like a lot of, you know, young men. And, you know, it was in the seminary that I realized that, you know, God had called me to be who I was and that God made me this way. And it was a wonderful sort of, it happened actually on a retreat. And, you know, I was reading over Psalm 139, which says something like, you know, oh God, you search me and you know me. You know when I stand up and when I sit down. You knit me together in my mother's womb. It's very beautiful. So that God has sort of made all of us the way we are. And to just feel that call to be accepted as you are was very profound and very liberating. So, you know, what I did was I spoke with my spiritual director on the retreat, and, you know, he said, you know, I rejoice in your honesty. I'll never forget it. I mean, it was a great word. And, you know, the head of the seminary said, you know, we are grateful that you're being honest with us. And I was afraid they would kick me out. But they said, you know, at the time that you entered, you told us as much as you could. And now, you know, the question is, you know, with this knowledge, you know, can you, you know, continue to live celibately? And, you know, frankly, it's easier to live celibately if you know who you are, and you know, and you can talk about your sexuality. So that's why I think, you know, for me, this contradicts so much of my own experience that, you know, I mean, as Jesus said, the truth sets us free. And I mean, I really think we have to believe that.
Now, you said you think it's easier for a priest to remain celibate if the priest is honest about their sexual nature. And for you, that means being out as a gay man. Do you think that a sense of sexual shame is not very compatible with celibacy?
Absolutely. I think, you know, part of being just a person, I think, is recognizing your own goodness. I mean, in the Gospels, Jesus talks about love your neighbor as you love yourself. And my moral theology professor said, you know, we always concentrate on the love your neighbor, but there is an implicit love yourself, you know, loving the person, you know, who God made. I remember I saw a bumper sticker a few years after I came out, and it said, God doesn't make crap. And I thought, well, that's pretty good. You know, my spiritual insight is reduced to a bumper sticker. But it's, you know, it's a good point. You know, if you have this shame about such an essential part of yourself, I think it's very difficult, or it's more difficult, to communicate to people, you know, God's love for them. I think, you know, having this acceptance of God's love makes it a lot easier to communicate God's acceptance, God's unconditional acceptance for them. And, you know, as a Christian, I mean, Jesus was all about going out to people who were different, who were excluded, who were shut out of the society because of shame. And his ministry, at least how I read it in the Gospels, is one of inclusion. There's a great gay Catholic theologian called James Allison, and he writes that in Jesus' world, there is no other. There is no person who is seen as other. He's always bringing people in. And so at the heart of that is this understanding, and this sort of radical understanding, that God creates everyone as good, you know? And I think being ashamed of who you are sexually, I think, just makes it harder to communicate that.
Well, this kind of gets to the basic raison d'etre for celibacy. I mean, are priests supposed to be celibate because sex is shameful, or, you know, sex is dirty? Or are priests supposed to be celibate to kind of transcend all physical desire and physical need? Or
well,
some
I,
other
know,
reason?
A, yeah. I'd say, you know, with all respect, I'd say neither of those. I think certainly it's not out of a sense of shame. I don't think one transcends that. Celibacy... And there's a couple reasons for celibacy. Celibacy, you know, initially was, I think, kind of a juridical thing, a legal thing, because the church was worried about property being passed on to sons and daughters and those kinds of things. But, you know, as it grew up in the church and as tradition continued, I mean, certainly in the great religious orders, chastity has always been a foundation of that. There's this idea that basically we are modeling the way that Jesus lived. You know, Jesus was not married from, you know, all we can tell. And he lived this life of service to others. The way I understand it is that celibacy and chastity helps me love a great many people very deeply. Now, that's not to say that people who are married or single or in a committed relationship can't do that. But, you know, for me, celibacy enables me to love other people very deeply and very freely, you know, without the tie of an exclusive relationship. So, for example, when I'm working with a group of people or I'm ministering in the parish, I don't have to worry about someone back at home being jealous, you know, for example, that I'm spending too much time. You know, I can give myself freely. I can give myself emotionally. And, you know, I find also that people respond to you in a much different way. There are, you know, there's no fear among people that you're only spending time with them, you know, out of an interest in them sexually, you know. And the number of times I've had people just open up almost instantaneously, you know, is really astonishing. And I think part of that is the trust that, you know, as a celibate person and as a chaste person, I'm there just because I love them, You know, it's not because I want to be in a sexual relationship with them. So celibacy is, I think, a beautiful way to live. Now, it's not for everybody, you know, but it is for a certain few people.
My guest is a priest who is gay and has asked to remain anonymous on today's program. We'll talk more about the forthcoming Vatican document that's expected to ban gay men from becoming priests after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is a priest who is gay and needs to remain anonymous, and we're talking about the letter that's expected to come from the Vatican probably in the next couple of weeks that is expected to say that gays cannot become priests. No, you know, I think it's understood that there are a lot, maybe you know a percentage of gays who are priests in the Catholic Church. Would you venture an estimate percentage-wise?
Yeah, I always say to people that this is totally subjective because I've never seen any studies, nor will you ever see any studies. But I would say probably about 20%, maybe 20, 25%, with the figures being a little higher in religious orders. That's just, you know, sort of my observation. But, you know, I think, you know, on the one hand, you either have people saying, oh, it's, you know, 70, 80%, which I think is crazy. Or you have people saying, no, there are no gays in the priesthood at all, which is insane. So, yeah, I mean, my experience, I'd say about 20%. But I don't know how scientific that is.
Now, as you've pointed out, in the Catholic Church, gays are called to chastity, to not act on their gay sexual impulses. Do you think that's one of the reasons why there's a relatively high proportion of gay priests?
Yeah, I do. I think I think in the past especially, maybe, say, in the 50s and 60s, if you were a gay man, this was one of the few avenues open to you, in terms of just being a kind of productive member of the Catholic Church, if you want to say that, that it attracted a disproportionate number of gay men. But, you know, I always think, I mean, if we're going to look at, how this happened, you wonder what part God is playing on all of this. I have to believe that God is calling all these gay men to the priesthood for a reason. I mean, there might be something, I mean, this is sort of radical, but there might actually be something extra about the gay man that enables him maybe to be a better priest. I've often thought that gay priests themselves have had to live with so much suffering in their lives that, you know, they're uniquely able to understand people who suffer. I really believe that. The same way that someone who's been, you know, faced a serious illness and has come out of it can understand someone who's in that same situation. So I really do think that God is calling gay priests for a specific reason, the same way he calls other priests for a specific reason.
Now, an assumption that some people make about gay men who become priests is like, sure, gays like to become priests because it's like being in a candy store. They're just surrounded by men. What do you think of that assumption?
Yeah, well, I know you're not saying that, but I just find that incredibly insulting because, you know, it's the stereotype basically that gay men can't control themselves, which is crazy and insulting. In my experience, I mean, look, if a person enters a seminary or religious order, you know, the point of the seminary or the novitiate, in the case of the religious order, is to determine whether or not this man can live peacefully and peaceably his celibacy or his chastity. And so, you know, you find out pretty easily who can live it and who can't. And if they can't, they leave. So, you know, this notion that gay men are basically coming in to have sex, I think is just insulting. And it's also not true. It also, you know, assumes that these seminary rectors and these novice directors aren't aware of what's going on. And they are, you know, if those kinds of things, you know, ever happen. So, I just find that basically the stereotype that the gay man can't control himself sexually, which once again goes against the catechism, you know, which says that, you know, gays can live celibately.
Now, you were saying that you're confident that this forthcoming letter is connected to the sex abuse scandal.
Yes.
What do you think the church should be doing to prevent more pedophilia?
Oh, the question, if I were Pope, what would I do? I think the idea of a seminary visitation is great. I mean, to make sure that everything is in place to ensure that seminarians and people in religious orders have a good, solid training in all aspects of priesthood, including, you know, being sexually healthy and sexually aware and emotionally mature, you know, so that we avoid the kind of people that, you know, ended up sexually abusing people. But I also think what the church needs to do is look at some of the ways that the sexual abuse crisis was deepened by some of the bishops, unfortunately, moving people from place to place. And I think that, more safeguards need to be, instituted to make sure that doesn't happen either. So I don't think it's just at the seminary level that it has to happen. I think it's also, at the episcopal level that, we need to create safeguards. Now, I think that after this bishop's meeting, I guess it was in 2002 in Dallas, a lot of that was put into place. And I think the idea that there will be no sexually abusive priests, in ministry is a good one. But I think to focus all this on homosexuality really just elides the main issue, which is how do we, sort of make sure that no pedophiles get into the seminaries, get out of the seminaries, and get into, parishes and schools. And that's a lot wider than just, gay priests. So I think the gay priest issue is really kind of a red herring.
My guest is a priest who is gay. His superiors have given him permission to speak with us, but asked that he not use his name. We'll talk more in the second half of the show. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The Vatican is expected to issue a document in the next few weeks that would bar gay men from entering the seminary and becoming priests. Let's get back to our conversation with a priest who is gay. He's received permission from his superiors to speak with us, but they've asked him not to give his name. Does it say anything to you that this forthcoming letter will be released very early in the papacy of Pope Benedict?
No, actually, I think that's just more the timing. I mean, the document had been in the works, from what I understand, pretty much ever since the sexual abuse crisis broke in 2002. Interestingly, the working document for the apostolic visitation, I think, was dated 2002, so, which it was just released about a month ago. And I think, what happened, I'm going to just guess, is that, with John Paul's sickness and his death, a lot of that stuff was put off. And I think it's more that Benedict is inheriting this rather than, this is something that is, coming directly from him. So I think it's just the timing. I don't know we can ascribe too much to the fact that it's coming out under his papacy. On the other hand, if he approves it, depending on the level of kind of authority this document will hold, that would be a sign that, he is, against gay priests. So, but I don't think this is something that he's initiated at the very beginning of his papacy.
Do you ever think of leaving the church? I mean, the church is basically saying, we don't want your kind being priests. Now, I realize it's not everybody in the church who's saying that, but it's the leadership that appears to be saying that. And how do you feel about being a priest in an organization where the leadership at the top doesn't seem to want gays?
Well, it's a great question, and I think, you answered it. When people say the church, they often just refer to the hierarchy, but Second Vatican Council had a beautiful way of looking at the church, which was the people of God. And, the people of God with whom I work accept me. And I also, that's the first thing. And I know that there are a few leaders and, maybe even people in the Vatican who will say that they don't want people like me. But, I also trust that, I've been a priest for a long time. And, the thing that drew me to the priesthood was this call from God. I felt that God wanted me to do this. And I have to trust that, first of all. I mean, that's been confirmed in my prayer and in my experiences in ministry. Within myself and from other people who tell me they're happy I'm a priest. So I have to trust that. And, the church is my family. I would no more leave the church than I would leave my family. And I always tell people, if there's a problem in your family, you don't just sort of pack up and leave. It's too important for me. That's who I am. I'm a Catholic. I'm born a Catholic, and I'm called to be a priest. And the other thing is that the church has had people within it who have always been, kind of gadflies. And I think there's a role for people who don't usually fit the mold. We are recording this on October 4th. It's the Feast of Francis of Assisi, which I think is a good time to talk about this. And, there was Francis, who basically during his time challenged the church to be more poor and more peace-loving. And, basically was seen early on as this kind of nutcase. And a couple years after his death, he was proclaimed popularly as a saint. And he's probably the most beloved of all saints. Now, St. Francis was kind of a burr under the saddle of a lot of people in the church. And so I think there's always been room in the church for people who try to call the church to a new way of looking at things. And so I think also leaving the church would be kind of irresponsible of me right now, because I feel that God has put me in the priesthood for a lot of reasons. And, you know, he's put me as a gay man who has felt, you know, accepted by the church in the church at this particular time when these questions are coming up. And so I have to think, well, you know, maybe I have a special responsibility to sort of, you know, along with other people, you know, help the church reflect more deeply on the experience of gay priests.
You told us earlier that it was basically after you entered the seminary that you came out to yourself and to others, and your spiritual advisor in the seminary said that he rejoiced in your honesty. If you were first joining the seminary today and realized you were gay, at this time when this letter is expected to be coming from the Vatican saying that no gays can join the seminary or become priests, what do you think you would do? Do you think you would try to remain closeted in order to fulfill your calling, or do you think you would leave?
Well, that's a great question. And I think just that question points out how difficult it is. I don't know. You know, I know a fellow who's just entered, and he's devastated. I mean, he spent a couple of years discerning, as we say, a vocation. And, you know, he's spoken about it. He's gone on retreats. He's prayed about it. He's talked about it with spiritual counselors and with seminary rectors, and they've, you know, as we say in the trade, they've confirmed it, you know. And now here he is in his first year, and he's devastated because he's now being told there's a possibility that that thing that he has discerned for so long, basically for his whole life, you know, is worthless. And, you know, I would continue to encourage that person to honesty. I would continue to encourage that person to trust in God, even in these strange times. But it's very difficult. I mean, in a sense, I'm one of the lucky ones. I'm already ordained. And, you know, there's nothing in the document from what I hear that's going to sort of call into question my ordination. But it's hard not to feel special sorrow for these men who are in training right now and who are awaiting this document. I think it's, you know, it's like awaiting a death sentence almost. And the person's going to have to decide what he's going to do. Is he going to sort of deny it, you know, for the rest of his training until ordination? Or is he going to leave and then deny his vocation? Which is the better thing to do? Which is what God wants you to do? I mean, it's a very difficult question. I mean, I think for me, I would stay. I mean, I would trust in the call that God, you know, has given me. But it's an awful choice for a person to have to make. And I think that, you know, I hope the church doesn't force people to make that choice.
You know, a lot of people are wondering, is this going to make it, you know, there already is a crisis in terms of the low number of people who are becoming priests.
Right.
So if you cut off gay men from becoming priests, and you mm-hmm. estimate that there's maybe 20% of the priesthood that's gay, that's just going to diminish the number of priests even further. Do you think that the church might be adding to a crisis with this policy?
Oh, I think the church, yeah, absolutely. I think the church would be adding to the crisis. And, you know, it's going to be felt, if this document comes out, it's going to be felt immediately by people who are interested in entrance and people who are already in training in seminaries. Long term, it's going to be felt by the people in the pews as they see not only fewer men entering and fewer men staffing their parishes and schools and soup kitchens and high schools and colleges and retreat houses, but they may also see people leaving. I mean, I've spoken to gay priests who have said that they simply could not stomach this, that this would be, a friend of mine said it would be like crossing the Rubicon. They could no longer live in the church. Now, I don't feel that way, but there are people who feel that way. And I know gay seminarians who have told me, celibate gay seminarians who have told me that they could no longer continue with their training. So yeah, I think it would be an unmitigated disaster for the church. And I really pray that it doesn't happen.
We've recorded this interview anonymously on your end because that's what your superiors wanted. If when this interview is broadcast, someone is able to recognize your voice and figure out who you are, how might that affect your future? Would it affect your future?
Well, I've gotten permission from my superiors, so that's the most important thing. You know, I think my friends will recognize my voice. I'm not a public personality, so people aren't going to be able to say that's who that is. I think my friends will recognize my voice. I don't know what would happen. I'm comfortable and confident that, you know, that I've got my superior's permission that it wouldn't be a problem. And I would hope that also people would listen to what I'm saying and you know, understand that this is coming out of not only my experience, but a real appreciation for the Gospels and for our tradition, you know, which I think calls us to honesty. You know, there's that line I keep coming back to, the truth shall set you free. And you know, I have to say to people, you know, do you believe that or not? When it comes to gay priests, do you really believe that? I mean, and if you do believe that, let people speak. You know, I think that, you know, if anything, the sexual abuse crisis has showed us that silence in the church is the last thing that we need. So, you know, I'm willing to take that little risk, and I'm happy that that my superiors have, you know, allowed me to take this little risk as well. At some point, you know, you have to just trust in God, and you have to trust that, you know, when the rubber hits the road, you know, it's do you or do you not believe in what the gospel says. And I believe that the truth does set us free, and I believe that Jesus calls us to speak the truth.
I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been a priest who is gay. His superiors have given him permission to speak with us, but asked that he not use his name.